lovely, lovely too. I'd need a stool, don't I? Let me say good afternoon to each and every one. My name is Liz Bailey. My anonymity's been shot to hell for a very long time. But I stand before you the most definite and grateful alcoholic you ever laid your eyes on. I want to take this opportunity to thank the committee for inviting me here to Albany, Georgia. When I got off the plane yesterday in Atlanta, the guy said, where do you want to go, to Albany, New York, or Albany where? I said, Georgia. And so, of course, they were very courteous to me. They drove me around from one part of that large airport to the other and got me on the plane to Albany. I'm grateful to be anywhere at 74 years old. I'll tell you that right now. I want to thank Sissy for her calls and her letters. There was another man that called me, and his anonymity is well protected because I can't remember his name. But thank you for calling me. It was a pleasure for Peggy to call me into New York and talk with me also. And it's a privilege to be with Peggy here on this podium this afternoon, because I love to see it when you stay with the program and live and work it. And I've come here to Shirley, to Albany, to see how they love you, Peggy. It's really beautiful. And if you expose yourself to it, you will get it. You won't get it sitting in your kitchen, though. I'll tell you that. I'm going to be not as the voice, but I'm going to tell a minister joke. And I always start my talks off like this so it gets me into the groove. I like what the speaker said last night. If you're nervous, you belong up here. And if you're not nervous, you sit down. And I loved it when he said that, because I'm always nervous. I never usually even eat any food before I go on a platform. I try to keep my temple empty so that God can work through me to you. I'm very serious about what I do. I don't take myself too serious, though, but what I do, I take serious, because your life is at stake. There was a minister preaching, and I don't want to forget Nancy. Where's my doll? Nancy. Thank you, and Chris. I'm trying to get all them thank yous out the way, and I've probably left somebody out. There was a minister preaching one time, and he said, if you drink alcohol, you're doomed to die. And the little old lady down front, she said, amen. He says, now if you smoke those cigarettes, you're doomed to die. And the little old lady, she said, amen. He said, now if you chew tobacco, she said, look at that. He done stopped preaching and gone to meddling. So I'm going to go to meddling. I have a friend that I met today. His name is Joe, and I'm not going to give you his last name because I respect his anonymity. But you know, I got excited when I seen Joe today. Joe has been to most all my anniversaries. We've been together for, he's got 31 years of sobriety, beautiful sobriety. And I thank God for Joe sitting here today. I really do. And I thank God for all of you that just finished with me in Kentucky, Tennessee, what's this other island I was on? And so many of you are back here with me this weekend. I think it's fantastic. And the voice, you keep it up. You're doing all right. You hear? You're all right. I almost amened you to death up here, too, didn't I? Because I'm good for that. I'm the oldest of five children. I was born in Brooklyn, raised in Manhattan. My dad was a pitiful drunk, not allowed to call anyone an alcoholic but myself. I grieved about my dad's drinking. I seen the police hit him with billies and the blood would spatter. Neighbors hit him with frying pans and the blood would spatter. He'd come out of Mother Karina's hospital wrapped like a mummy many times. I'm ever grateful that I was in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous when my dad hung himself out at Central Islip Hospital. Ever grateful that I was in these rooms. My mom, I've never seen her take a drink in my entire life. And for many 24 hours, I was always wishing that I could give her two drinks and bring her to hell into here, because she could have used the whole 12 steps and the whole 12 traditions. My mom passed away 8 years ago, 3 days short of being 95, so you know she had a good life, bless her. My mom made my first drink at the age of 12 years old. And when I look back, I was a stone alcoholic at the age of 12 years old. So don't ask me about crossing any lines. I've seen a hell of a lot of lines, but I don't know nothing about crossing any. And you know, she made rice wine. Now I'm 12 years old. And she left myself and a little girl named Marion to sieve this rice wine through cheesecloth. And I'm going to show you the difference. Marion sieved and sipped two drinks and she went home. But I sieved and I sipped. And 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 I put on a drunk at 12 that was a drunk. And my mom lectured to me all night long. But I went out in the street the next day shaking my little self, telling my friends, whoo, what a ball I had. I don't even remember what the hell happened. And that began to be the pattern of my life. If you didn't get drunk and pass out, you didn't say too much to me. And I could never stand anybody who took a drink and stood there for a half hour with it. You got on my last nerve. And I didn't bother with you either. I got out your way. Now, at the age of 14, I began to sell King Kong booze. I want you to believe it was King Kong. The man made it in the bathtub next door. I bought it by the gallon, and I sold it for 40 cents a cream pitcher. Now, I was told to take mayonnaise, olive oil, butter, cream, line yourself up, and when you do that, you can drink plenty. You know, they even tell you to eat a good meal. Let me tell you, that King Kong was so powerful, it went all through the mayonnaise, the olive oil, the butter, the cream. I stopped taking that sick stuff. And I drank me some booze, and I made good money. I put a better table on for my brother and sister. I bought little shoes instead of sneakers. And, you know, I made good money. But, of course, at a certain hour, I had to be padlocked into a side room for my protection. I'm laying out the window one night. I live one flight up, and I see this sharp dude just tipping on down the street. Lord, he was so sharp, almost fell out the window, you know. Woo! And then he had a roll of money. I said, oh, there's a live one. I was always looking for a live one. You know that. I look for the live ones in AA, too. I don't look for no deadheads in AA. I'm sorry. I don't deal with the deadheads in here. I go with the people that are going and doing and giving. Those are the ones that give me the charge. Well, I went downstairs and I latched on to this little sharp dude with this roll of money, and I found out it was a $5 bill around a lot of ones. But I latched on to him anyway because he's cute. And he's going to take me from uptown Manhattan down to the Lower East Side, and I'm going down there to give all of them a play so they can come uptown and give me a play. So at the age of 14, I felt that I was a woman. I'm drinking, I'm partying, and I'm hanging out. And he's 10 years older than myself, so I asked my mother to sign for me to marry him. And she says, oh, no, dear, over my dead body. Do you know that man will have you out in the street, and you'll live a terrible life with that man. And I found out something about myself at the age of 14. Don't you ever, but never, tell me what not to do. Don't do that. I am so grateful to God that AA suggested everything to me. Nobody has ever told me what to do in AA. They suggest things to me. So I quit school at the age of 14. I took sleep-in jobs. I was drunk every Thursday and Sunday. And at the age of 17, I left New York with this very man, determined. See, don't preach to nobody, because the more you preach, the more they're going to show you and kill themselves. So, of course, I go to Baltimore, Maryland. The third day of January, 1939, I'm standing up in the courthouse, and I'm crying my heart out. And the minister stops my ceremony. He says, my dear young lady, would you mind telling me just what you're crying about? I said, at last, I got him. Now, I'm going to be honest with every one of you in this auditorium this afternoon. That was the sorriest day of Mr. Bailey's life when he said, I do, to Liz Ulrich. Mr. Bailey never stopped crying from January 3rd, 1939, till he went home with the Lord August the 12th, 1986. A sorry day for that man. Now, I came back to New York with the marriage license just a flying. No more mama, no more neighbors. Nobody's going to tell me how to live. Whoo, I'm 74 now. Could you all picture what I was at 17? Whoo! Oh, honey, I'm down with it. Yes, indeed. I'm telling you, I'm going to paint New York red because I don't have to care to nobody. I got me a marriage license. Well, I got back to New York with Mr. Bailey, and Mr. Bailey gave up every liquor joint. He gave up gambling. He gave up hustling. He gave up going to parties, and he sat down. And I became a mental case at the age of 17. Here I am, rearing to go, and this cat is sitting. And he sat from January 3rd, 1939, till he went home with the Lord August the 12th, 1986. And I could not take that sitting down. No way. And I started nursing my little drink through the week. I look forward to weekend drunks. Now I have to have a drink to wash, to iron, to cook, to talk. I couldn't do anything without a drink in my hand. And many, many people pulled me up on the carpet. Why do you drink the way you do? Why do you act the way you do? Ooh, I could rattle off excuses a mile a minute. And my main excuse was loneliness. All my life, I had been looking for someone to love me, to understand me, to do something with me. Couldn't find it in the streets of New York and into the bars of New York. I thank God that I've lived in the day and time of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you love me until I could love myself. And I survive on your love each and every day. Yes, I do. Those hugs, those kind words that you say to me keeps me going, really keeps me going. I look forward to even being with you. And so there again, I'm watching me go down. You've got to remember now, when I was drinking in the streets of New York, no one was talking about alcoholism. I would say, good morning. You'd say, what we drinking? I said, good morning. What you chipping in for? You never did say good morning. And I was the runner. You give me the money, I drop kids, groceries, drop everything, and run for that booze. And once I picked up that one drink, I couldn't tell you what was happening to me behind it. Waking up in places that I didn't know. And here again, I suffered with guilt and remorse. Because each time I would say to myself, you're not going to be as bad as you were the last time. You're going to try to control this thing. But each time got worse. Never better. Never better. I stayed on my knees to Mr. Bailey. Daddy, please. Please forgive me. I don't want to act like this. I don't want to be like this. And he would tell you 20 minutes to an hour. My thinking would go off and I would be off. Off to the races again. And I remember asking him, because he was not an alcoholic, maybe if you drank with me. Haven't you non-alcoholics heard that? I wouldn't want to drink so much in Rome. Because see, once I picked up a drink, I left home. I never stayed there. Because I had to go drink in peace. And I couldn't stand your silent treatment or you looking at me. So I leave, take the drink and go. And so he said to me, he went around and he bought a bottle of Gordon's gin one night. We laid up in the TV room and about 11 o'clock the bottle got like this. I took my elbow and I hit him. I said, Daddy, would you run around and get another bottle before the liquor store closed? He said, not me, Liz. I've had enough. You know I wanted to kill him, don't you? You ever see an Indian on a rampage at 2 o'clock in the morning? Here I am. Zoom. Aren't you afraid to go underneath the Long Island Railroad at 2 in the morning? Who the hell was thinking about the railroad? I wasn't thinking about the railroad. I was getting to Sutton's Barn Grill to fill my Coca-Cola bottle so that I would have something to carry me through the morning and then also sit there and close up the place. See? I watched me going down. And one of my neighbors pulled me up on the carpet. She says, I'm very much ashamed to live next door to somebody like you. She says, I bought this house to get away from people like you. What's the matter with you? I said, Jim Lee, I suffer with my nerves. And Jim Lee suggested that I drink rum. Isn't that nice? I left Jim Lee standing in my little bitty kitchen, and I ran around to the Empire Liquor Store, and I bought me a bottle of rum. Now, I live in Jamaica, New York at that time. Could some of you please tell me how in the hell did I wake up in Briarcliff, New York, with that bottle of rum? I still don't know how I got to Briarcliff, New York. This lady took me in off the streets. Her name was Wig. And I became a bulls fighter in Wig's home. And I'd put a shot in my coffee in the morning. I'd call it Coffee Royal. I'd hide the lousy bottle. I found it. I used to stick it up in the old-fashioned tank. I'd be drunk running up and down drinking this cold liquor all day. When the lady came home, I'd be oofing and booping, and the woman didn't know what to do for me. And she sat me down by the fire one night. And she says, "You know, Liz, you're a lovely person." She said, "But drinking is your problem." She said, "I put my husband out of here for his drinking." Well, that lady filled me with so much of guilt and remorse when she got through with me that I wanted to die. Because here I'm up in some godforsaken country. I don't know how I got there. I'm away from my three children, and I'm fighting the booze. I am fighting the booze. And I decided I'm going to sit in the Catholic church all day. I'm not going to touch a drop. I'm going to peel this lady's potatoes and get her dinner started. I'm going to try to do a decent thing. Oh, my Lord, at 4 o'clock when I walked out of that church, I walked straight into a bar. And I asked the bartender, "Give me one to relax. I'm going to peel this lady's potatoes. Give me two to get started. I'm going to really peel her potatoes." The third drink they gave free. You don't walk out on no free drink. That's not nice. No, you don't do that. Then you got to buy one. I have to buy one back to look good. It's very important that I look good. And then when I get to the fourth or fifth drink, to hell with her and her potatoes, baby. Let's roll. So, you know, I'd be rolling, and the lady never got no potatoes from me. That I'll tell you. And I got very depressed for my children, and I called up Mr. Bailey, banged up the phone. But my neighbor who was taking care of the children, I called her, and she said, "Please come home, Liz. Your little girl won't eat, and she's calling for you." So I went back home on a cold March night. I'll never forget it. And you see Mr. Bailey always, when I'd make it back, be throwing me out the front door in brown bags and shopping bags. Now I'm sleeping down in people's unfinished basements. "Don't drink down there. Don't smoke down there." And I'd go take care of the children in the day, back to the basement till he would let me back in. Now I begin to get myself banged up. Girls, don't you ever fry a frozen chicken drunk. Don't do that. I hit the grease over and burn up both of my legs. My legs stayed like raw meat till I came to AA. AA is healing rooms. You would never believe today if you looked at my legs that I had ever had third-degree burns from being in these rooms sober. And there again, broken fingers, arms all sliced up, fell down the basement steps. Mr. Bailey stepped over me and went to work. I swore till I came into AA that he whipped me while I couldn't get up off that floor. The man never whipped me, touched me, just stepped over me and went to work. And I had broken ribs. So every time you looked at me, I had a new patch somewhere else. And the good sisters at Mary Immaculate Hospital was always patching me up and saying, "Miss Bailey, please come to an alcoholic clinic on Tuesday morning." And it went in one ear and out the other ear. I did not know what she was talking about. Could care less what she was talking about. Because I'd take the broken finger, the burnt legs, whatever I was bandaged with, right straight to Sutton's Bar and Grill and drink over that all day long. Drink over this broken finger all day long. And I kept watching me go down. I woke up one morning with my head coming off my body. I took Alka-Seltzer. I took BCs. I took aspirins. I put a raw egg in the beer. I was trying to do everything to get my head straight, and I couldn't get it straight. And finally, I reached over and grabbed the Bible. I figured maybe I'd find the answer in the Bible, how to straighten this rotten, filthy life of mine up. Mr. Bailey passed my room, and he seen me with the Bible, and he starts screaming, "Put that Bible down, you hypocrite! Put it down! 20 minutes to an hour, you'll be so drunk. You'll be slapping a kid down." He's right. Nobody but nobody got in the way of me getting a drink. And nobody but nobody gets in the way of me staying sober. It's the same difference. And so he kept it up screaming at me. He says, "You'll be hopping a cab." And the cab drivers used to say, "Please, please take somebody else's cab. Don't get in my cab. Took me 3 days to clean up my cab behind you. Who the hell does he think he is? I paid 50 cents to get in that cab. Don't tell me who to take, or I would be swinging a corner." And this was the first time I thought of suicide. Never before had I thought of suicide. I literally ran and jumped up into the second floor window. And as I'm getting ready to throw my body down into the yard, there's a little lady named Nana Backer. And she spots me standing in this window. And she starts to scream, "Mr. Bailey, Mr. Bailey, you better get her. She's going to jump." His head comes out the next window. I'm standing here. He comes out the next, and I see his hands come out like that. He says, "Nana, will you let that bitch jump?" He says, "I'll be rid of all my problems, all my troubles. Please let that bitch jump." Well, I looked over at him. I wanted to know who the hell did he think he was. I guarantee every one of you I got down out of that window. I got back in the bed. I pulled the sheet over me, and I slept that one off. I continued to drink. I continued to do insane things, burn up furniture, break up furniture. Came in with a lousy $2 beer drunk. "Look at this. You're drunk again and no dinner." I said, "Man, I've asked you time and again, shut your mouth when I'm drunk." Woo, he kept his mouth going. I said, "See me up to the bed, please." I remember he walked me 3 steps up to my bedroom. When I came to, I had a black slack suit on that day and a gold coat. I came to, I was stretched out on a bench. A policeman was sitting at the foot of me. And people were walking around on the ceilings as far as I was concerned, because I was stretched out there. And a big man standing in the doorway did like this to me. There is a God, because when I went over to this man, I didn't know how I could answer the questions that he asked me, but I answered them. And he said to me, "You know, Miss Bailey, and Mr. Bailey, take her home." And I said to Mr. Bailey, "And don't you dare lay down. If you lay down, I'm going to get you for taking me to some Kings County hospital." And he sat up in chairs for 3 nights, and you don't blame him, because I'm crazy. I might have gotten him if he laid down. And I continued to drink. Mr. Bailey came to me one day, and he says, "You're the nicest wife when you're sober. Drunk, you're a Jekyll and a Hyde. Why don't you try this AA? When you desire a drink, run over to the phone, pick up the phone, and call someone to talk you out of the drink." Ooh, I laid his soul to rest. I'm not going into my character defect, but I think you know what I told him to do with AA, don't you? Okay, as long as you know what I told him. And he walked away from me because Dr. Graninger had said to him, "I want you to go home and tell Mrs. Bailey she's going to drink herself to death. She'll drink herself into a mental institution, or she will drink herself into Alcoholics Anonymous. And once you tell her that, keep your big mouth shut and take care of Mr. Bailey." Praise the Lord. Hallelujah. Amen. The man never, never mentioned AA again to me. In the meantime, I'm going downhill, and I'm watching me go downhill, and nobody's talking about alcoholism. Do you know how fortunate every one of you are today? And I must inject this in here. If you have a detox, a halfway home, or any place on this earth today that's helping a drunk, will you please go there and get that help and appreciate that help? Because when I came here, nobody was helping no drunks. There was no halfway homes. There was no detox units. When I'm privileged to go into these places, I thank God for the counselors that will listen to you. Even if they don't have the answer for you, tell them what's inside of you. Get it out. But when I came here, nobody would listen to me. Get away from her. Don't have her around. You know, that's what I was hearing. And so there again, count your blessings for what you have today. It was not here for Liz. And then I kept on drinking, and I kept on watching me go down. I think it's 8 to 10 months. I cannot pinpoint it. But I'm going to tell you now about my last drink. I drank for a period of 19 years in the streets of New York. I didn't come into AA from a bed. I came in from the streets. And I watched me go down. I keep telling you that. Each drunk got worse, never better. My last drink, I'm drinking with people in the VFW Hall on 110th and Merrick Road. Hard two-fist drinkers. I was right in there with them. And you know, there was a lady coming to sell some insurance for the house. I never called this a home. There was no love there. There was nothing there. Material things, yes. I had every material thing any woman on this earth would want. Because Mr. Bailey happened to be a furrier, girls. He made fur coats. And I had fur coats like beans. Because every time I had a period of dryness when I just couldn't drink anymore, he would make me another fur coat. And one year he made me the most gorgeous leopard coat you ever laid your eyes on. He threw a party for the job even, because they worked on it. And he brought this coat home and he threw it out on the bed. And I looked at that coat and I gave it away because I hated it. I said he made it so he could spot me anywhere. And that's how sick I was. And in sobriety, I wished I had that coat many a time, believe me. See, you have to get sober to see how sick you are. You never get sober, you never get a chance to see how sick you are. Believe me when I tell you that one. And so there again, I remember the phone rang this particular morning, and I heard the guy's voice, and I banged the phone on him. He called me back the second time. I said, listen, man, don't bug me. There's a lady coming here, I want to see her. I haven't seen her since I'm 8 years old. And I banged the phone on him the second time. He called me the third time, because I had gone to the store and came back. He said, Liz, do me a favor. Hop a cab. I'll introduce you to the people. I'll put you back in the cab, and I'll send you home to your company. Because I had told him I hadn't seen this lady since I was 8 years old. Well, I got in a cab. Now, you all know the rest of the story, don't you? Got in the cab, went over to the post. The bows started lining up, the jukebox is going, and I'm singing, you always hurt the one you love, the one you don't want to hurt at all. Give me another drink. Smile if you're happy. Give me another drink. I'm 74 and haven't seen the lady till yet. Because when I woke up, I was in one of my son's twin beds. Now, don't ask me how I got to this twin bed, because I can't tell you that either. And at the foot of this bed stood my mom and Mr. Bailey. And my mom's got her head just going, and she's screaming, somebody done something to her. Somebody done something to her. I look over at Mr. Bailey, he got his head going. And he's saying, no, Mom, no, Mom, nobody's done anything to her. She happens to be a very sick girl. Ooh, he didn't call me bitch. You know my name is bitch, you know. He said, girl. Ooh, something went all over my body. I got up out of the bed. I went to the basement of the house. I stayed in the basement for 2 days praying to die. I wanted out. And the second day, my son, 12 years old, was sitting there in a chair. And I said to him, Richard, I can't live like this. Just can't live like this. This is not the way I want to live. Look at this. You can't depend on me for anything. And I said, Richard, I'm going to go up on that Long Island Railroad. I'm going to jump in front of a train, and I'm just going to end it all. And I started to scream, and oh, God, please help me. I have never screamed to God so as I did that second night in that basement. For God to help me. And I'm going to tell you something. If you call upon a higher power of your choice, he or she or it will answer you. because God answered me that night, told me to try this AA that your father has told me about. I took the telephone book down, I called up AA, and they didn't have anyone to send me. When I came to AA, there were very, very few women in AA. Let me tell you how grateful I am for you women who come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so grateful for you because you've come out of the closets, out of the woodwork. Please stay out. I've been privileged just a few months ago to speak to 700 of you in Washington, D.C. Went to Chicago and spoke to 850 of you in Chicago. I just was on this island. What was it? Some of you girls are here that was with me on St. Stephen's, was it? Huh? St. Simon's Island. I go to so many of them, I can't keep track of them. But St. Simon's, there was over 350 of you women there. I am grateful for you. Stay here and get the dignity that I have today. Oh, yes, I stand tall with dignity today from living this beautiful fellowship. Not in and out and around, in. There's a great difference. Thank you, women, for being here. You guys, I didn't even want to talk to you when I got here. I didn't look out for see nothing but men. And I was not going to tell my dirty linen in front of you guys because I was a foxy chick. I had to even learn how to dress in AA. I came in with the slits and the furs thrown across my shoulders. And a Father Kelly sent me the message, ask that broad what she doing in AA. I was staying sober, but I was foxy, honey. I'm telling you that right now. I had you guys trailing me. Yes, you were. And I love you. But here again, I went into Manhattan since they didn't have anyone to send me. And intergroup was one flight up over a bar. And I said, to hell with AA. And I said, no, you've taken bus, subways, you run a couple of blocks, try to get up those stairs again. Now, if you don't call this a higher power, you better tell me what it is. I got in the middle of the landing, going up the stairs. And as I went to turn to go down into the bar, this lady must have watched me from the front window because she looked down the stairs at me and she said, are you having trouble? I said, yes, ma'am. And I ran up the stairs to her. She escorted me into the front part of the office, and she sat down. She introduced herself to me, and she started to tell me about her life. Oh, my God, I got goose pimples and chills. I started to fall off the chair. Who talks about themselves like this? My mother says put it in a closet, in a drawer, under a rug. Don't you dare go out and tell anybody where you got the black eyes and the busted mouths and the fights in your house. You leave it in your house. And she kept talking, and I said, why don't she put this stuff in a garbage can and make sure she got a lid on it? Because I wasn't going to tell you about me. No way. I didn't have time anyway. But, of course, she says to me, you know, Liz, it's the first drink. I says, oh, come on, honey. I've been drinking for 19 years. She said, when you take one drink of any type of alcohol, even down to cough medicine, she says, it's only a matter of time that a compulsion sets up into you that you have to go all the way. She hit me right between the eyes. I've seen myself take two drinks on a Monday, two lousy drinks on a Tuesday. You're looking for me. Wednesday, I go to Gert's department store. I buy me a fifth. I drank the whole fifth and nothing happened. Woo, done found a brand I can drink. You know I ran back there Thursday and got me another bottle, don't you? Friday, I'm knitting without needles. Have any of you knitted without needles? Well, Friday, I'm walking up and down and I'm knitting. And I've got to go get that drink to get me back in focus. And she said, we do it 1 5-minute. 1 10-minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. We do it with a sponsor. Now, I don't want to ever hear a member of AA today tell me that you can't find a sponsor. When I came into AA, there was 150,000 members. Today, there's over 2 million members. And you're not going to tell me that not one of these 2 million can be your sponsor. You've got to get a sponsor. It's we can do together what you will never do alone. You must have a sponsor. And here again, she gave me the choice of two churches. Ooh, I can't go to St. Benedict's. My children go there. Well, if the priest sees you and it's in the church, he must know that you need help. I don't know about you girls, but my hair stayed drunk. I could never keep my hair right. I'd just get nice and done up in 20 minutes. You wouldn't believe I sat in that woman's chair, believe me. Mr. Bailey would give me money for clothes. I never looked too tough because I wanted to drink up the money. You know that, sit on the bar stool. And so I bought a little two-piece dress, blue suit, and I had my hair fixed, and I went to my first AA meeting. I'm mimicking them. I'm not making fun of them. But as I walked towards that coffee counter that day, two of the girls behind the coffee counter looked up at me and said, "You don't look like an alcoholic." I said, "What the hell did I get myself into? Let me get the hell out of here." And I started running out the door, and they always kept two people at the door. See, and when I started out the door, this man slapped me over here on the shoulder. He says, "What's the matter with you? Where are you going?" I said, "Those girls said I don't look like an alcoholic. I don't know what an alcoholic looks like. But I'm about to lose my mind, my home, my children, and everything through drinking." He said, "Have a seat, sweetie. You in the right place." And they put two of these tables together that night in the middle of the room, and they all sat around and they shared their strength, their hope, and their experience with me. It is but for the grace of God. Whew. But for the grace of God. Alcoholics Anonymous. Al-Anon. Alateen. Alatot. O-A-G-A-P-A-N-A-E-A-F-A. The only A that I have not shared at is Sex Anonymous. I refuse to go to Seattle, Washington to put my sex life on that tape to come across the United States because I still have a family, okay? That's the only A that I have not spoken at. But all the rest of the A's, I've been right there with you carrying this 12-step message the best that I can. I came into AA July the 11th, 1952. I just celebrated on Jones Beach this year 43 years of sobriety. I came in at 31. I'm now 47. 74, rather. I'd like to be 47, wouldn't I? And then you young guys would have to watch out for me. I'll tell you that, if I ever go back to 47. Because I like them young guys in AA. That's why I don't deal with senior citizens yet. I put the "yet" on the back of it, okay? Because I tried to deal with the senior citizen, and they moan and they groan, and I come out so depressed. I swore I'm not going to die for that 50-cent lunch. No, I swing with the young people, honey. I love them. I want them to stay here and be the next legacy here. Yeah, I want you to stay here. Because I know what it is out there. And you keep coming back and telling me it ain't get better out there. And I believe you. I believe you that it's not better. And I know for true it's worse now than then. But, of course, now I came in and I was 13. Mentally, physically, and spiritually, I was beaten to a bottom. Like I said, I was ready to take my life. They didn't work AA the way you work it today. I'll tell you what they beat into me. Don't drink. Don't drink. Don't pick up that first drink and make a meeting. Make a meeting. Meetings, meetings, meetings. And go to the meeting you don't want to go to because that's the one you get the zinger every time. Then you get out and you try to help somebody else. When I'd get a phone call to help another drunk, I would stop washing, ironing, cooking, cleaning, whatever I was doing. Everything stopped. I called another person, and I went out on a 12-step call. I used to bring the drunks into my home, he or she, and I would keep you till I could get you on your feet. And once I got you on your feet, you made 7 meetings a week and 3 times on Sunday with me. And I've never sobered up anybody but me. Never have I. And that's why I'm ever grateful they taught me to stay sober for myself. If I had to stay sober for my mother, I'd have been drunk, drunk, drunk. It took my mother 29 and a half years of my sobriety to tell me to stay with them A's, whatever they are. I don't plan to leave these A's. I know what's good for me. I have watched people who leave these meetings. And you know, at one time here a few years ago, old-timers had a hard time in AA, a very hard time. And so many of the old-timers left AA, I beg God to bring them back. We need to be a power of example for other people to show that it works. And I noticed that those who leave the meetings don't last too long. Because it is so true. It's in the giving of myself that I keep. It's in the giving of myself that I receive these blessings. It's not I, me, my, me anymore. It's we. My daughter says, aren't you sick of hearing yourself? I said, no. Oh, there she goes to save the world. I said, I'm not looking to save the world. When I get on these platforms, I just want to touch one. I just want to reach one. To have you stay in these rooms, healing rooms. I used to go to meetings so sick, and Mr. Bailey would look for me to come back home drunk or sicker. I'd come back, just flipping, and he'd back up against the wall, because I fooled him every time. Every time. Never came back drunk. Came back high. Natural high. Ain't nothing like a natural high. And you gotta watch it when it gets good. It'll get so good, it'll scare the hell out of you. And when it gets that good, I mean, watch it. Try to have attitude plus gratitude to equal your recovery. Find something every day to be grateful for. If it's just getting up saying good morning. Just good morning. And so there again, Mr. Bailey couldn't stand me sober. He took my first 10 years. And I mean he worked overtime to try to get me back into the streets of New York. Every time I went to a meeting and came back home, he cursed me down. And I'd say, I love you, sugar, and kept on going. Never had a car in my whole sobriety, and every night a different dude picks me up. And we got that instant love, and my neighbor says, oh, my God, from a drunk to this, what is she putting down? Ooh, I still upset my neighbors. 3 weeks ago, a guy drove up with a sports car to pick me up and the top down. I said, man, let me go get the scarf to cover my head. He said, no, Liz, I'll put the top up. And my neighbor gave me a dirty look. And then the next day, he dragged his kid from me and he wouldn't speak. So I went and I told his mother. I said, you know, I got a Puerto Rican friend in the Bronx. I'm going to bring him out here to tell you what kind of life I live. I am not a prostitute. I said, I'm out here trying to help people. Me don't care what kind of house with me. That's your house. And I said, but I'm going to let him tell you, though, because it's important that you know who you live next to, as far as I'm concerned. But their attitude has changed. Yesterday when I was getting in the cab to come to the airport, she's throwing me kisses, okay? Because she knows I'm not a prostitute. Because I was bugging her hopping these cars. I know it. I bug them. Because I hopped the cars, I'll tell you. I got into Nancy's today, and she said, oh, Liz, forgive this car. I said, shut up. I don't have a scooter. As long as you're coming on wheels, I'm going. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm ready. You don't even have to wait for me. I'm standing in the door waiting for you. And so again, 33 years ago, I had the honor and privilege of speaking for our late co-founder, Bill Wilson, at his 28th anniversary. And Bill was a beautiful person. And he presented me with my first big AA book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says to me in the front of it, my pages are turning yellow, but he says, dearest Liz, you're the most magnificent demonstration of all that is AA. Affectionately yours, Bill. Now, Lois and I used to speak together, his wife. The last time we spoke together was in Sing Sing. and we had dinner together. Lois, too, was a dream. And Lois worked just as hard as Bill to start Al-Anon. And I don't like it when I hear AA people knock Al-Anon, because it is a family disease. You get sober, please get sober, and you'll see all the effects that you've done to all your loved ones and people around you. I damaged all four of my children with my sickness. I did. I have a son now, one that was 12 years old that I was talking to on my last drunk. And he's so sick. It's pitiful. He lives in California. And I pray for him every day. I think he's spoken to me a good 10 times in 43 years. But it's okay. I love him. He doesn't have to love me. And I believe that my father will bring him in at the right time. It's not up to me anymore. My second son was an addict and an alcoholic. And that's another reason why I went to Al-Anon. To learn that I didn't cause it, I can't cure it, and I doggone can't control it. It's called the three C's. And another thing I learned in Al-Anon was M-Y-O-B. If you want to save yourself a lot of trouble, mind your own business. I'm through raising children. They're 55, 48, and 39. Now, who am I raising? I've got to let them go and live their own lives. My 48-year-old daughter, she was 5 years old when I stopped drinking. And doggone it, you know, she's had 6 mental breakdowns. She's just coming out of the 6th one. And how am I able to help this girl all the time? And she comes running to me. She runs to me, but I practice these principles to her. I carry these principles that I'm taught right straight to Judy. Today, Judy has been in college. She graduated from Malloy College. She's back in another college, LaGuardia. She's come out of that, and now she's back in school because she's going into management. Judy is doing fine today, driving her car, a nice apartment. Give love back to your children. Help them when they need your help. And there are times, like my second son, I had to put out. Because I told him, you don't bring your drugs and your drug friends into my home. I'm not losing everything like you did. And I had to put him out. And I grieved a few moments putting him out. I took him in. But you know, I put him out there because that's where he wanted to be, out there. He was not going to go by me telling him to get a job. I used to say to Dennis, which I'm saying to you young people, the right road may be hard, but you'll be the winner. The easy road, the price is heavy. 25 years ago, June 25th at 2 in the morning, Dennis was shot and killed. He left a beautiful wife and 2 children. Again, 6 weeks after Dennis was shot and killed, I had a beautiful sister. I asked her many times when she'd come to me. I'd put praying hands around her neck. I'd tell her to go to my closet and take whatever clothes she wanted. Tried everything to be an example for her. I didn't preach. I don't believe in preaching. And she went into Manhattan at 1730 St. Nicholas Avenue and jumped 30 floors. One tragedy after the other, I've had to G-R-O-W through in this fellowship. But I can honestly tell you, I have not done it alone, because you have been right with me through it all. Whatever I have to go through today, you're right with me. So I've lost most of my family. My baby sister and my brother, they belong in here too, but all I can do is be an example for them, not preach to them. And so I do have their respect, which is so beautiful. I have 12 grandchildren that I see by appointment only. And I want you to believe that, grandmas. Liz is through babysitting. I babysat for years. This is Liz's time. 74 going on 75, you know it's my time. And I enjoy my time. I set myself up before I leave Hollis, New York, that I'm going to have a good time. And I have a good time. I don't care what's going on around me. I have a good time. I had to move last night out of my room in the hotel at 12 o'clock because the noise was too much for me. And I was thanking God, look at this, you're sober. You can tell that people at the desk there that you're not going to stay in this room. And I got stepped up. I'm in a suite now, Daryl. I'm in a beautiful suite. Beautiful. And then he called the security guard to escort me, which was nice. Because I wasn't going to walk them dark roads by myself. But I'm in a nice place today. Again, I admit and I accept and I surrender to the fact that I am an alcoholic. I have no choice to pick up a drink if I want to live this fantastic life that I'm telling you about. I came to believe there was a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I got news for every one of you. If you're going to stay here, you got to change your thinking and your actions. And you're going to watch your company that you keep. I don't deal with everybody. I really don't. There's some people that are not good for me, and I'm not good for some of them either. It works both ways. Because a lot of them don't want to hear the truth. They want to fight you and run from you. That's your business. But I will speak the truth to keep me free. And I have to speak as I feel because I don't want to be in bondage again. And I'm free, free at last. Woo! Thank God Almighty I'm free at last. And some kids say, yeah, Martin Luther King went to the top of the mountain, Liz, but I'd be damned if you ain't been through the mountain. So I've been through the mountain. Been right through it. There again. I've had 9 operations in 41 years. I've been cut to pieces 9 times in sobriety. I went up and had 3 operations in 6 weeks. And the doctor says to me, you've got cancer. And I'm going to give you 6 months to live. I said, hold it. Hold it. I live a program that teaches me I live one day at a time. Give us this day. Because life is full of yesterdays and no tomorrows. We will not forget the past, regret the past, but we will not live in the past. Each day is a new beginning. I am now 28 years an arrested cancer patient, and you can see my motor's running fine. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Don't do like Liz did. First 5 years of AA, I didn't want to talk about no God. You talked about God to me, I'd lay your soul to rest. Because nothing was going my way. Husband, mother, children, neighbors, everybody was waiting for me to get drunk. And I couldn't understand that. But thank God you told me I was sober for myself. And I remember so clearly, I picked a sponsor. A tough sponsor. I'm so glad she didn't go along with me in my garbage. She laid it on me. She says, listen, Liz Bailey, let me tell you something. AA don't need you, but you need AA. I'd cry. And I'd run back to her and whine some more. And she'd say, listen here, you either sit on the pot or you get up off it. She was my sponsor for 28 years. I have another sponsor now. I will not be in this fellowship without a sponsor. I, too, need somebody to talk to. I do not have all the answers. I'm still learning each day. But I want the pastor to hear this about me. I went as far as 5 years here not talking about a God, and I stayed with migraine headaches, deep, deep depression, isolation. I cried a lot. I did not start to get well into this fellowship till I start to put the God that's within me to work. So I slowly put one hand in God's and I had the other one in AA. And I used to stand here and tell you I don't have a hand to pick up a drink. And some broad in the Bronx says she would have sucked it through a straw. So I said, oh God, I wasn't looking to crazy. I came in here to learn how to stay stopped. And I started to get well. I started to get hungry for the word. I went in and out of prayer meetings and churches. And finally, I found a church where I could raise my hand and praise my Lord all I wanted to without dirty looks. But I had a long time finding this church, the Massapequa Tabernacle. And I went into this church and I was baptized when I was 25 years sober. merged in the water into the name of Jesus. Took me 20 years in AA to get the key to my life. And the key to my life is to seek God first and His kingdom and His righteousness for all things to be added unto me. And this has nothing to do with religion, because greater is He that is in me than he that is out there in this world. And I found a God that I can go to any time I choose. 2 years ago, I had that ninth operation where I was cut open and closed back. I've never seen anybody open and closed back was able to tell you about it. But I'm back. I just finished covering 22 states and 3 islands and twice to Canada within a month. Because God has work for me to do, and I'm obedient to my Lord to show Him that I love Him. That's how you show Him you love Him, by being obedient to do what you're supposed to do. And you know, it's a beautiful feeling. And I called the nurse in one night. I said to her, I want to make a confession to you. I feel like I'm dying. And she said, and I want to tell you, I've tried to live a good life. And I believe in a God. She says, oh, Miss Bailey, don't tell God when to take you. He know when to take you. I said, oh, Lord, let me shut up with this woman. Jesus, I thought I was making a confession. And so she come by in the morning. She said, good morning, Miss Bailey. How are you? I said, I don't know. I seem to die in the night, but I sure come alive in the day. And that's where it is. Nighttime seemed to be bad for most of us. But I've learned now to seek God first and His kingdom and His righteousness. Now, I get up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning before I deal with any of you, anybody, and I make Him first every day that I'm allowed to get up. I want to express my love to each one of you today. If you're sitting here this afternoon, my God wanted you to be here. My God runs my life today. I was supposed to be the Sunday morning speaker. And then yesterday, I always tell people, I think I've said it to Nancy and Peggy twice already, your life is subject to change without notice. And I've learned whatever God wants for me today, that's what I will do today, His will. Relieve me of bondage of self, Lord, that I may do Thy will, and know that You will take away my difficulties. He does do that. I left out my 2 great-grandchildren. I never dreamt that I would live to see 2 great-grandchildren. I have 1 little granddaughter. They're Muslims. My daughter's had 12 children, lost 6, have 6. And she was cooking fish one day, and the little girl said to her, Omi, what are you cooking? She says, I'm cooking fish. Omi, I don't like fish. I like chicken. She said, well, you better go pray about it. So she walked away, 3 years old now, with her little hands up in the air, to pray. And when she came back, she said, Omi, did that fish turn to chicken yet? Because that's how we are. We think because we pray for something should happen right away, you know. But I love it. I cracked up laughing, too. I went to my kitchen floor with that one. Did that fish turn to chicken yet? Just because she prayed, you see. But bless her heart. I love you. I thank you and congratulate you on the 42nd. I'm so happy you stay here. And please suggest to your friends to come to these conventions, because it's really, to me, just like the voice said, the meat of the program that they find. And you know, every time I have to fly up in that air, and I'm in the air quite a bit, I should know all the stewardesses and the captains and everybody by now. And I just sit up there like I'm sitting in my living room, letting myself go to my higher power. And I said to a lady that was very nervous, I said, you know, I sit up here like I'm sitting in my living room. She said, yeah, but I don't see no clouds around my living room. So I was trying to make her comfortable, you know. But I let go and let God. Keep coming back. Keep coming back. Put your hand out to one another. And one last request that I have of all of you, please keep the love going in AA. Don't ever let AA get cold, because it's your love that kept me here, and it's your love that survives me even up till today. I just love you. And I'm here to be of service this weekend. Any one of you care to speak with me, pull me on the side. I love you. I'm here to be of service to you. Hoping every time, I just sat there even and asked God to speak through me to you. I never ask for any material things. The only thing I ask him for is to let me touch one of his children. One of his children. And a lot of you line up and say, I'm the one you touched. And if I, Liz Bailey, have just touched one of you today, I, Liz Bailey, I have not lived in vain. Thank you so much!